Chapter 59. Joe listened as the departing helicopters traveled overhead and the staccato song of the rotor blades echoed through the shell of the old craft he and Priya were hiding in. They'd heard drones earlier, and trucks and other vehicles had come and gone with some regularity. "Are they looking for us?" Priya asked. There was a raspy quality to her words, brought on by the dust and a lack of water. "I don't think so," Joe said. Making his way to the cockpit, he put his face to the dusty glass, gazing through a tiny section he'd cleared during the night. "The helicopters are heading toward the mountains." "Maybe she was meeting with her broker," Priya said. "Some of her gray money came from this region." "Gray money?" "Of suspicious origin." Joe nodded. "She took more than money. By the look of things, she patched that plane together with parts from this place. Which suggests a long history here and powerful friends. That doesn't bode well for our efforts to escape." Joe knew that. Scrapped Russian aircraft, hot days, and frigid nights told him they were somewhere in the high deserts of Central Asia. Most likely in one of the stans, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, or Turkmenistan. All former Soviet republics with barren areas and plenty of leftover cast-off Red Army equipment. It made sitting still their best bet, but remaining in place didn't mean inaction. Joe watched Tessa and her people until they disappeared behind another aircraft. With nothing more to see, he returned to the cargo bay. "How's it coming?" Priya was sitting on the floor, surrounded by electronic parts. Some of the parts had come from the helicopter's old avionics system. Others had been taken from the Mercedes. She made a soldering iron from a copper wire, powered it with electricity from the SUV's battery, and began building a receiver and transmitter from scratch. "I still have work to do on the transmitter," she said, "but the receiver is ready to test. Care to do the honors?" Joe disconnected power from the soldering iron and rerouted it to the radio receiver. Using a dial taken from the helicopter's audio system, Priya applied power slowly. Too much, too quickly, could melt down some of the connections. Joe sat down beside her and placed two leads on a small speaker they'd lifted from the Mercedes. As Priya adjusted the frequency, they heard static, silence, and then finally a station playing Arabic music. "Not exactly the top 40 countdown," Priya said. Joe smiled. "Still a beautiful sound. What else can you pick up?" "We should be able to pick up anything that's transmitting," she said. "We can go all over the dial." With precise movements, she tuned the radio to lower and lower bands. The static returned in various forms and intensities. "We might need a better antenna." "Wait," Joe said, holding up his hand. "Go back. Right there. Stop."
"What is it?"
Joe had his ear next to the speaker.
"English."
The reception was so weak and the volume so low that Joe couldn't make out what was being said.
"Can you fine-tune it?"
Priya put her fingers on another dial, making tiny adjustments. The voices vanished completely for a second and then came back, slightly louder and significantly less garbled. Joe listened closely. He could barely believe what he was hearing. Priya heard it too.
"It's Tessa."
"And one of her men," Joe said as another voice chimed in.
"But how?" "We've locked onto the bug Kurt placed. It's still transmitting," Priya said. "It's sound-activated, so it stays in battery-saving mode until it picks something up."
Joe held his ear closer to the speaker, struggling to make out the words.
"They just stepped inside the plane," he said. "They're standing next to the doorway."
"Let me boost the power," Priya said. She adjusted another dial, and the audio came through with more clarity.
"Have you lost your mind?" the man was shouting. "If Buran and his people call your bluff, we're all dead."
Tessa replied just as sharply.
"Without something to hold over them, we're dead anyway."
Muffled sounds that were indistinguishable came next, followed by more from Tessa.
"Buran and his friends are making unspendable fortunes. I promise you, they will do anything, absolutely anything, to keep the price of oil up in the stratosphere. They've spent billions cornering their own particular markets, and they've been waiting decades for this opportunity. They're not going to go back.
And what happens when they ask for a little proof?" the male voice demanded. Surely you don't expect them to hand over all that money without a demonstration. If we can't show them the countermeasure and prove that it works, we're right back where we started, dead all over again.
You think I don't know that, she said. That's why we have to find the counteragent.
We spent plenty of time looking 3 years ago. What makes you think we're going to get lucky this time?
Because we're going to let the experts do it for us, Tessa said. Austin and his friends.
For a moment, everything went quiet. Then Tessa's voice returned.
As you pointed out, they're looking for the Minerve already. And since finding sunken wrecks is something of a specialty for them, I imagine they will discover it quite soon.
And how exactly does that help us? The man asked. Even if they find it, they'll put a wall of ships around it. We'll need an armada to get through.
They will, Tessa acknowledged, but not instantaneously. There will be a brief window of time, a gap in between the moment of discovery and the arrival of any support ships. We'll make our move while that window is open, descending upon them from the heavens like an angry angel and taking what's rightfully ours.
The words lingered in the air. When the man spoke again, his tone had changed.
They do the work. We take the prize, he said. It's not as crazy as it sounds. Good thing you didn't manage to kill Austin, since he's suddenly our only hope.
We'll kill him once he's found what we're after, she said. For now, we need to move closer to where they're searching. That way we'll be able to react the instant they find something.
It wouldn't hurt to put some distance between us and Buran, either.
No, it wouldn't.
I'll get the plane fueled and bring the drones and the men back, he said. But what about Zavala and the Kashmir woman?
I'll tell Buran there are a couple of traitors running loose who might upset the table for all of us. He'll send people out with orders to kill them on sight. He might even enjoy taking his anger out on them. But they'll die here in Kazakhstan, one way or another. Now let's move.
Nothing else was said, and the transmitter shut down after recording footsteps moving away. Joe and Priya exchanged glances.
I've put Kurt, Paul, and Gamay in terrible danger, she said. I should have never given in, no matter what they threatened.
They would have tortured us until you gave in, Joe said. By letting them win up front, we kept ourselves from being broken, and put ourselves in a position where we can still be of use.
How? She asked.
By warning them, Joe said. Can you redesign it to broadcast in a shortwave band?
It'll add some time to the project, she said.
We don't have much choice, Joe said. We're not going to get any help around here.
Priya nodded. I better get to work. Shortwaves propagate in the deep of night.
Good, Joe said, and I'll help however I can until dark. After that, I'm sneaking back onto the Monarch, where I can sabotage it. With a little hard work, I can keep it on the ground for days.